I always like to remind people that when you come up here, people want you. They want to see you. They're here to love you, and they're here to see you succeed. And if the first time you try something, it's a little awkward. Could you raise your hand if you've ever been a little awkward the first time you've tried something? Second time? Third time? Even after years of doing the same thing? In many churches, it's traditional to start with what you would call the old 1-2, an Old Testament reading followed by one from the New Testament. And it's usually done with sort of an attitude that the older book is really just there to confirm the truth of everything in the newer one. It's just a setup. The Jewish past, from this point of view, provides a base so that the Christian present can sit solidly on top of it. But if you pay close attention, you'll find that things are not really quite so simple. Our first reading is from the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 5, the longest of the Ten Commandments and the most detailed, from which we might reasonably conclude that it's among the most important. Observe the Sabbath day to keep it holy, as the Lord your God commanded you. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord. In it you shall not do any work. You shall remember that you were a servant in the land of Egypt, and the Lord your God brought you out from there with a mighty hand and an outstretched arm. Therefore, the Lord your God commanded you to keep the Sabbath day. By which the speaker, who is supposed to be God communicating the message through Moses, means Saturday, the day of worship for Jews. But our second reading is from the Gospel of Matthew, also chapter 5, and also very concerned with details. Think not that I've come to abolish the law and the prophets. I've come not to abolish them, but to fulfill them. For truly I say to you, till heaven and earth pass away, not one jot or tittle will pass from the law until all is accomplished. Whoever relaxes one of the least of these commandments and teaches men so shall be called least in the kingdom of heaven. Ooh, seems like the stakes are pretty high in getting even the smallest details right. That sounds like a lot of work. But hold on, I thought that worship was supposed to be about taking some time out from all of our labors to enjoy things like listening to stories and singing together. Now, you might have noticed in your order of service that there's usually a hymn here. There's not today because we have our annual meeting. But it just seems so awkward not to sing a little bit. So I want to invite you right now, in your mind, find the first line of your favorite hymn. Doesn't matter what it is. First line. Have you got it? Have you got the tune in your head? Got the words in your head? Are you ready? Okay. Sing. Thank you. I was looking to get sort of a sound version of this critter right here, and I think we might have accomplished it. Truly strange. Well, when I began researching the strange story of the Seventh-day Unitarians of Transylvania, something tickled my memory. Wasn't there an anthropologist who'd done research in 20th century East Africa whose observations fit with what I was reading about Eastern Europe in the 15 and 1600s? It's Mary something. Mary Douglas. That's it. But what was it that she'd said? Fortunately, I had just the right person to ask. I live with the right person to ask. My wife Pamela is a professor of anthropology, and she gave me an instant summary of Douglas's views. One idea was about cleanness and uncleanness. Dirt, she says, is just misplaced matter. And what matters most is that it's not where it's supposed to be according to some group's rules. Blood is a good example. Ancient Hebrews and modern Jews take great pains to remove every trace of it from food, while others can consume it freely, sometimes fresh from the animal. The next idea is about categories. This is Murray Douglas. Proper placement is not only a matter of physical location. We also want things to fit into a clearly defined category. So for Jews again, pigs are a problem because they have a hoof, but they don't chew cud like other hoofed animals. The pangolin, like on your order of service, is a mammal that looks like a reptile with scales like a fish, but no teeth at all. It lays eggs, but then it nurses those young. So what the heck is it? Should eating it be taboo? Or maybe something reserved for exceptional people to eat as a sign of their exceptionalness? Well, different people come to different conclusions about what to do with that critter. Well, Pam added that some of Douglas's most important ideas are about the human body itself. During times of intense social stress, such as persecution of one group by another, the group under assault may react by trying to exercise extreme control over the bodies of its members, particularly with regard to food and sexuality. She asked me now, was the community that you're researching experiencing any extraordinary threats or pressures? That's the sort of question that an experienced, I should say brilliant, teacher asks. I'll tell you about the situation of these early Unitarians now, and we'll see how you think we should answer that question. I spoke last time about the betrayal of Francis David, the Unitarian leader, by his longtime friend Giorgio Biandrata. He felt that David had gone too far attacking church doctrines when he denounced the practice of worshiping Jesus. David had said that Jesus was a man, divinely inspired, yes, but not some new category of God-man. After David's imprisonment, Biandrata called together all the Unitarian ministers who'd shared David's views and threatened them with a similar fate if they would not sign an agreement renouncing these radical thoughts. Over the following years, things went from bad to worse. 5 ministers were publicly beheaded. Soon, the Austro-Hungarian Empire, Rudolf II, claimed Transylvania as his own. He was a fanatical Catholic, determined to eliminate Protestantism from the land. He had ministers tortured, skinned alive, or burned slowly over piles of their burning books. Soldiers raped Protestant women and children. In time, no horses or oxen were left, so people, who now were shifted to the category of draft animals, pulled plows in teams of 10. Food prices skyrocketed, famine raged, and soon people were forced to eat dogs, cats, animal skins, toasted bones, and sometimes, yes, each other, a few decades before Jamestown. I'm sure they would have preferred pangolins, but there you have it. The fury of politics, power, and religion combined and weaponized worse than anthrax, displacing, dirtying, and destroying everything in its path. It was under these circumstances that Sabbatarian movements began taking shape in the region. Now, even before the death of Francis David, there were reports that many Unitarians were looking more to the Old Testament than the New for guidance in their worship and daily lives. One worried observer wrote that Unitarian ministers in certain areas had all begun to, quote, abstain from blood and pork. Well, when it comes to food, you can only abstain from what others continue to take into their bodies. And that now separates you from them. Good heavens. What's to come next? You can guess. What about that command to observe the Sabbath on the 7th day, on Saturday? Early Christian communities had been divided on the question, and some took Jesus' words about fulfilling every jot and tittle of the law to mean stick with Saturday. But later, Constantine, The first Christian emperor decreed Sunday as a common day of worship. And an emperor's opinion has a certain force. Well, people looking around Transylvania could see the force of Emperor Rudolph's opinions lying all around them. But instead of deciding to play it safe religiously, many chose to go in the opposite direction. Besides keeping a Saturday Sabbath, avoiding blood, pork, and other foods deemed unclean by the Old Testament, they also began to observe that book's days of fasting and feasting, and to practice circumcision. Yes, ouch. But you get the idea. What was it that Mary Douglas said about groups under pressure? They might react by trying to exercise extreme control over the bodies of their members, particularly with regard to food and sexuality. Eat this, cut that. Lucky members. Well, Andrew Aosi was a follower of Francis David. He was a nobleman who'd lost his wife and children to disease that rage in these hard times. He got sick too, and while he was convalescing, he began a close study of the Bible. And soon he became convinced of many of these Seventh-day or Sabbatarian views. Though he was a layperson, he began a prophetic mission of preaching these views, first to family, and then neighbors, and then beyond. He'd been down, but he was not out, much like the Unitarian community as a whole in those days. He began to compose hymns, poems, and essays promoting the Sabbatarian way. Unitarians, you might remember from the last sermon, could no longer have access to printing presses, so Aosi paid for these to be hand-copied. Such handmade texts, appearing in what was now a sea of print everywhere, must have enhanced the special feeling of the ideas that they contained. Many people received them eagerly and asked for more. Handmade books. They do have a certain eye appeal, don't they? They wanted more. Others greeted these little books with horror. What do you mean? Jesus is the Messiah and the greatest of the prophets, but not the Son of God? Mosaic law with its dietary restrictions, circumcision for males, and strict Saturday Sabbaths with no work still holds for Christians? What kind of religion is this? It was like a spiritual pangolin that fit no category at all. By 1600, although the majority of Sabbatarians were Unitarians, the majority of Unitarians were not Sabbatarians. But they were getting uncomfortable. Right? Those far-out people within your group, they can make you feel pretty uncomfortable. Teachings about God and Jesus were mostly the same in both branches. The difference now was in religious practice. Sometimes that's where we feel the differences the most. We can voice somewhat different beliefs and say, oh, how interesting, I never thought of it that way. But if we actually do something different, our hackles go up, especially when it involves the body. Differences then become less interesting and more disturbing. So if blood and pork are unclean for you, and I still consume them, does that make me unclean? If you consecrate Saturday as a day of rest, but I work to get the crops in, does that make me a sinner in your eyes? If you believe that circumcision is required for all men to be holy, do I dare go to sleep when you live next door in a house full of knives and scissors? You can see how easy it would be for our imaginations to spin out of control. Sometimes religious teaching gets ahead of practice, which still needs time to catch up. No doubt the Sabbatarians felt that they were simply taking the teachings that they shared with most Unitarians to the next practical level. Those other Unitarians may have felt that their Seventh-day brothers and sisters were letting practice get ahead of thinking things through. It's possible for that to happen, even today. For example, let's try another show of hands. How many of you are strict vegetarians? Don't be embarrassed. Strict vegetarians. Vegans? No vegans. I can make vegan jokes in the future. Note to self. How many avoid red meat, preferring fish and poultry? Okay. How many of you like to have a big old juicy steak at least once a week, if you can? Ah, brave souls, go ahead and let us know. Be proud. How does that fit with your religious beliefs or our shared UU principles? Now, another question, how many of us are designated organ donors? Oh, wow, that's a majority. How does that fit? How many of us plan to be buried in the ground in a coffin? One person. Some are kind of going like this. I'm just thinking about that one. Who has purchased space in a mausoleum above ground? Okay, this my family loved this. When they got to this country from the old country, oh boy, we can be buried above ground. No worms and dirt. Who has let your family know that you prefer cremation? And a slight majority, I'd say, of the people here prefer cremation. Yeah, me too. I should have raised my hand. Why? Does that fit with respect for the inherent worth and dignity of every person or the interdependent web of existence of which we're all a part? I think that if we sat and talked about it, you could explain how it does fit for you. But it would seem very strange if you also began insisting on cremation or vegetarianism or a high-protein, all-meat diet for everyone here on pain of being excluded from religious fellowship. That would seem very contrary to the spirit of this church. But it's the kind of thing that often happens in religious history. Briefly, it looked like Sabbatarianism might win the day, or at least win a place as an alternative Unitarian community, along with the pork-eating, uncircumcised Sunday service-goers. Simon Pecci was a talented scholar who'd been hired as a tutor for the three sons of Andreozzi, the man behind those beautiful handmade books. Eyosi recognized his brilliance and sent him abroad to study in such places as the Ottoman capital, Istanbul, Italy, North Africa, Spain, and France. He returned fluent in 12 languages and, quote, with a profound knowledge of Jewish teaching, plus no doubt some firsthand knowledge of Islam, which also affirms one God only and no funny stuff about the divine reality existing as three distinct persons. But Eyosi's sons had died, so he made Pesci his heir, the heir to his substantial fortune and estates. Pesci entered public service, became an advisor to several princes, and was for a time, quote, the most powerful man in Transylvania, until he fell victim to political intrigue among the local nobles. Things could have turned out very differently, and we too might have been meeting on Saturdays and being very careful about what flesh we eat, what skin we cut, and when and where we cut it. Sabbatarian groups would arise from time to time from the Reformation to the present. We recently got a big packet of in the mail calling our church to, you know, come out of our sin and become Saturday service worshipers. I have it, so I'll show you it later. And some of them have become established churches with their own institutions of learning. Some have had a great deal of influence on our daily lives. Another show of hands. How many of us had cereal for breakfast this morning? Oh, quite a few. No one ate like that before the labors of great Seventh-day Adventist dietary reformers like John Harvey Kellogg. Hear that name? But the Seventh-day Unitarians left us nothing like cornflakes or Special K. They dwindled until there was just one congregation left. When in 1867 the Hungarian government passed measures ensuring the safety of Jews in the region, that last congregation chose to adopt Judaism. Local Jews were willing to adopt and embrace them as well. And so ended the story of an unusual church, and the story of an unusual synagogue began. I hope I'll get a chance to visit that congregation someday to see how they've mixed this and that and what they've done with their space to express their unique vision and purpose in the world. Just as I look forward to seeing what we do with ours. Maybe it will be something like a pangolin. That's fine with me. I like pangolins. And the way they don't seem to fit any category. They're complex and interesting and beautiful, like you. I trust that all we make here will be beautiful and interesting too. So may it be.